Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Laura Stanley, host of Inside School Food. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live, almost at 12, on the Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Joined, as usual, with Nastasia, the Hammer Lopez. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, we got Jackie Molecules in the engineering booth.
What's up? We got ice cream sandwiches on the way.
Sandwiches! We also, I think David's over there.
Oh,
in the booth
did somebody
as well,
say
right?
Sandwiches?
Yes.
Well, we also have Peter... Peter the Kim Master, Kim Wipe, the Captain Kim from the Museum of Food and Drink here for all of your food and drink.
What's a Kim Wipe?
A Kim Wipe is the laboratory version of Kimball and Clark Kleenexes that are used in laboratory environments. Kim Wipe.
Yeah.
And Peter Kim just crossed the line, as usual, habitual line stepper, and made an obscene gesture in front of the fellow who luckily is texting, eating his pizza.
Oh, man.
Is there anything more depressing than a dude chugging a glass of red wine by himself with a pizza texting? It's like if you're just having the glass of red wine and the pizza.
You,
if it were like 7 o'clock, it'd be a little more forgiving. It's noon on a Tuesday.
It sounds like a Billy Joel song.
It's noon on a Tuesday.
You should rewrite that. It's not 5 o'clock on a Saturday. Whatever. What was it?
I'm texting alone.
Yeah, Peter's using his flamenco skills, but many of you flamenco might not know skills. Because Nastasia, while she loves to share other people's personal information on the radio program, doesn't share her own. It was her birthday yesterday.
No, it was
2 days
Sunday.
Ago. Yeah. Sunday. Same. Anyway,
every year.
So Booker.
Every year.
Oh, so you don't want this stuff?
That's from Booker, not from you.
You don't want the stuff I got you?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. So Booker wanted to get her Sour Patch Kids.
Thank you.
And then Dax wanted in on the action, so.
Thank you.
And then, Nastasia and I, our favorite shopping area is the As Seen on TV section of the local
CVS.
Nastasia goes to CVS because it has close proximity to her. I go to a Rite Aid because, did I mention this already? The new Rite Aid, they've gone, their buyers aren't local. I didn't buy this, don't worry. But there's an entire section of garden tools in the lower Manhattan, lower East Side Rite Aid. There's a whole section of garden tools and hose accessories for your pocket hose.
Right.
Don't get me started. It's called a hose holder. Habitual line stepper, Peter. But I was like, who the hell's gonna, we're not in fancy parts of Manhattan like Nastasia, who's part of a community garden. Ain't nobody needing hose implements. Right, actual garden hose implements down in my neighborhood. But I saw something that actually I've always wanted to buy because it horrifies me, but I can't buy it for my own use, so I got it for Nastasia, and talk about it.
Oh, my God!
Yeah, tell them what it is, Stas.
Meal cookbook.
It's the Dump Meal Cookbook. I have purchased Nastasia, the Dump Meal Cookbook, and luckily, folks, in that same section, because I know that Nastasia Lopez... does not have a crock pot. Hold on a second.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Oh, wow.
A New York apartment sized Proctor Silex tested proven.
Oh, my God.
Rite Aid bought crock pot.
Oh, my God. It's
perfect for two for you and Mark Stas.
Oh,
so, I want you, well, yeah. So, I think that, and we'll see what the people in the chat room think. But so the idea of dump meal. What's the lady's name who wrote Dump Meals?
Kathy Mitchell.
Kathy Mitchell, author of Dump Meal, also had the other cookbook, Dump Cakes, Dump.
We got to get her on the show.
Yeah. So my point is that it's kind of a horrifying concept. Buy three cans of this and a hunk of that, throw it in the crock pot, walk away, and then when you get home from work, you have a meal, right?
I'm going to try it.
So anyway, so I think that people might enjoy Nastasia highlighting a recipe maybe like once a week or something, making it, like actually trying to eat it Nastasia Lopez style, and then come and breaking down the dump meal for us. I mean, maybe, look, maybe, in fact, I know this lady is making more money than we're ever going to make on anything that we do with the dump meals. And, you know, like, so why are we worried around, like, all, like, we're all worried about little nuances of flavor and production and stuff. And it's like, no, just dump it in the crock
pot. Have you had an idea as good as dump meals?
No, apparently I have not. Apparently I have not. The dump meal. So see, maybe you can look through here while
I
we're talking.
I would do a chili.
Yeah, but for, no, you won't because you hate cumin.
Two-bean chili. I thought when you give a number like that, it has to be an odd number.
She has a two-bean chili in there?
Yeah, it's a two-bean.
Come on, there's no such thing as a two-bean chili.
It has to be 357, you know, or something. It goes to an odd number.
Yeah, how many beans in the salad? It's never like a two-bean salad.
Four? Yeah.
No, four-bean? No.
It's an odd number.
Odd number of beans. This is like Peter
Same with beans and grains.
Really, grains as well?
Yeah, multi-grain bread. You have 11 grain, 13 grain, 9 grain, never like 6 grain.
It's true, actually.
Yeah, that's true. You know, but sometimes, in other words, like if you only had 2 grains in it, you just wouldn't call it out.
No, of course.
You would multi-grain, maybe.
Right, yeah.
No one has like duo grain.
So here's one, spicy orange chicken nuggets. So you put it all in the crock pot. Frozen popcorn chicken bites. Teriyaki marinade.
Oh, my God.
3/4 cup orange juice concentrate. Some orange marmalade, sriracha, and orange peel.
Orange peel? Why are you going all fancy on me? All of a sudden now you
that's
have to...
That says optional.
We have a few things happening here. There's an ice cream sandwich delivery that just happened. And I also have Don Lee on the phone.
Oh,
so.
All right. We'll take some Don Lee while we're getting the ice cream ready. All right, Don Lee, you are on the air.
How's it going, Dave?
Going all right. Going a little better now that Nastasia's cooking up something in the dump, in the dump pot. We should call it the crock.
Well, speaking of bad business plans, I've got a business proposition for you that is worse than your Deli Belly plan.
Oh, have I ever spoken about Deli Belly on air? Does anyone remember whether I've spoken about Deli Belly on air?
Yes, you have.
Okay. Just for those of you who don't know, the idea is we go to places where there might be stuff in the local water that gives you severe gastrointestinal distress. We ship the water here to your locale and serve it to you in the comfort of your own home so that you can, you know, wrangle out your issues with your own toilet and your own doctor and then go travel with impunity. That's the Deli Belly horrible, horrible, terrible idea. All right, go.
So we take this to the next logical conclusion. Why get sick? Why not just have a fecal transplant? I call it super poop.
Super poop. Well, have you read Mary Roach's excellent book, Gulp?
Yep.
Yeah. So in there she discusses – Mary Roach, excellent author, by the way. Her books are phenomenal. She's a very funny writer on science topics. Discusses poop transplants, and that fits in, Peter, quite well with your farm-to-toilet kind of thinking for the museum. But you actually want to make a business of this? Don't you still need to get people sick before you?
I think you need to take one for the team, go everywhere, drink all the tap water everywhere, and create the ideal flora fauna in your system, and then market your poop as the super poop.
Wow, that is so hardcore. Like, that might be the grossest thing we've ever discussed.
Yep.
Do we have a bell for the grossest thing ever discussed on?
I don't think I have a bell for that. I don't know.
Like a gross bell?
I'm like...
Wow.
I just have this.
Is there such a thing, Jack, as a sad cowbell?
A sad cowbell? I don't know.
I'm trying to imagine what a sad cowbell would
sound. Let's see if I can do it. No, that's
still,
not really
still
it.
Too.
It's too. Yeah.
Still too. Like it needs to be like muted somehow.
Yeah.
We'll work on it. We'll work on the sad cowbell for
this?
You. Yeah.
That's even sadder,
juicy.
Right?
That fits super poop.
That's what you would sound
like. More like a bowel movement.
This.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, Don. You got anything else for us? Otherwise, I got to go eat some ice cream sandwiches.
I just want to do a quick rant to say that I'm really mad at all this native advertising I'm seeing. I just found out that Hellman's Mayo has trademarked the term Strange Witch and is getting celebrities to talk about weird sandwiches.
What?
Hashtag Strange Witch.
Wait, what? First of all, what the hell is a Strange Witch? Any sandwich that's odd?
Apparently.
Do you put mayonnaise on a Cuban sandwich? I didn't know that was a thing, and then I heard some people were like, no, you got to put mayonnaise on a Cuban. What are your thoughts, guys? Mayonnaise on a Cuban?
Nope.
I don't know.
No? No. I like mayonnaise quite a bit. I from time to time will purchase the Hellman's, which is known as Best Foods mayonnaise for those of you who are west of the Rockies. I think it's just west of the Rockies. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what I think about that. I don't think sandwiches should be strange. I think sandwiches should be delicious. That's my feeling.
Do a search on Twitter for strange. You'll see a lot of advertising. Most recently, Patrick Harris just posted something. Love that guy, but why is he shilling for Hellman's?
I don't know. I like Neil Patrick Harris as well, so I'm going to assume that he just likes the product. I will do some research, Don, on Neil Patrick Harris's sandwiching stuff. But in my mind, Doogie Howser can do no wrong. I mean, from Doogie Howser to Starship Troopers, you guys are Neil Patrick Harris.
No, you want to hear this strange which he made?
All right.
Hellman's, peppers, garlic, thyme, allspice, and coconut.
Yeah. First of all, what kind of peppers?
Does it matter? I mean,
and what kind of coconut? What are we talking here?
I can't think of any combination of
like
those things.
Unsweetened desiccated coconut? I mean, it's kind of like a neutral thing. I mean, think about it. You use that all the time in savory, right? So what do we got here? What kind of peppers?
I don't know.
It's also worse than that. It's not bread. It's on tostones.
Oh, yeah, that's a bad idea. Yeah. Yeah, that's not a good idea. I mean, who knows? Maybe it tastes good. Not a sandwich. Tostone is not sandwich-sized. It's a cracker-sized. Peter, do you consider something between two pieces of cracker a sandwich?
You don't want to get me started on this, but no.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't either. I don't either. Yeah, no. So are we adding leavening to the...
It is sandwiched.
It is... Oh! That's very strong. What are your feelings on... Do you require leavening for a sandwich?
I think there's a continuum, and I would say leavening puts it in the more sure camp of being a sandwich.
Right. So in other words, there's a gray area.
I say no.
You say...
You got to take into account the bread of suffering, of affliction, matzah.
Yeah, but they didn't have time to make a sandwich. They're running through the desert trying to escape. They didn't have time to make a sandwich.
They didn't have time to make bread.
Wait, they happened
to put some meat between two matzah to carry it, so it's easier to eat in the desert while running from the Egyptians. Can you deny them their...
I don't know. They had to bake the bread within like 10 minutes of the water hitting the flour. They're not going to have time to sit there and slice the pickles and put on the mayonnaise and all that other stuff. You know what I mean? I think you're supposed to be, if it's affliction, the sandwich is like a height of delicious, right? So like, if it's supposed to be affliction, what the hell are you doing?
My point of view on
this, I like cream cheese on a matzah though.
If you have unleavened bread, but the shape of the way you're structuring this thing is actually a sandwich, like a slice of unleavened bread and then stuff that you would normally put in a sandwich and then a slice of unleavened bread on top, that could qualify as a sandwich. However, but if it's wrapped around it, then I think you're starting to move into more like burrito.
Look, here's another thing I'm going to add, right? Like, whether or not something is technically a sandwich is kind of moot. And by the way, we need to get to these ice cream sandwiches. They're going to go. But the point is that there are sandwiches that maybe are sandwiches, but they suck. And here's why. A sandwich, you should be able to pick it up. Because remember, open-faced sandwiches are what? Not sandwiches. Because they're literally not sandwiched. They are a layered it's topped. It's like, I don't know. Point is that you should be able to lift a sandwich in the air and take a bite out of it without it shattering into a billion pieces and raining down onto your lap. So matzah doesn't qualify. Matzah is like a big piece of shatter. It just you crush it and it shatters.
I would have to agree.
Yeah, it's not right. Matzah, peanut butter, delicious. Peanut butter and jelly on a matzah, delicious, not a sandwich. Matzah pizza, not pizza, delicious, not a sandwich. Even if you snap it in half. You know what I'm saying? Anyway. That's my feeling. All right. So we have some ice cream sandwiches here from Milk Cult, DC, which are we've been following them on Twitter for a long time. I've never actually met them. I don't think. I was actually going to be in DC on Friday. I was going to maybe stop, but I'm.
What is it?
This is a Ziploc bag, Nastasia. I think someone pilfered some of the sandwiches. These was sent to the show because. We did a session where
so let's see how many you can eat.
All right.
Yeah, now go.
All right. Let's see what we got here. I didn't realize I was going to go into that. I was young, by the way. My wife doesn't allow me to do that stuff anymore.
Like the most
vanilla chocolate chip.
Yeah.
Now, Jack informs me that in the trip, and I can see they were slightly melted and remelted.
I would say there was like a 35% meltage happening, you know?
35% meltage?
Yeah, and then we, you know, threw them in the freezer, so.
Oh, so they're, yeah, the wax paper.
Crystally, then.
A little bit. Not like all the way, you know?
Peter's always got to hate. Peter, you know, Peter is like a big ball of hate.
Overcooked in underseason.
Yeah, that's like, yeah, Peter, we told that story on the air, right?
We were at somebody's, where were we? We were in a...
We were in somebody's, like, favorite restaurant. We were somebody's favorite restaurant.
In Williamstown.
Somebody's favorite restaurant. I'm eating, so Nastassi, explain this.
And some professors took us out to their favorite restaurant. They asked Peter what he thought of the food, and Peter said, undercooked and overseasoned. Overcooked and underseasoned. Oh, God.
Rude.
Mm.
So people can see what it looks like.
No thanks, Dave. No. I don't want any ice cream sandwiches.
Good.
Thanks, man.
Good. I'm glad you don't. What do you got?
That's a thing of ice cream.
I just discovered something. It's hard to talk while you're eating an ice cream sandwich. Nastassi, you're going to have to talk for me. Explain what you're taking out here.
I took out a tub of vanilla ice cream, and now I'm trying to separate other sandwiches.
It's coconut kefir.
Oh. Oh. I don't want to spoil my appetite.
What?
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You were mailed an ice cream sandwich from freaking Washington. You were going to eat it.
Now,
Plater, what flavor do you have?
I don't know what flavor this is.
And Nastassi said that she's got the best one, the least melted one, the one that was closest to the ice pack.
Vanilla chocolate
chip.
No, I
see vanilla beans, but it could be vanilla bean matter, of course, right?
Well.
Wow.
Why don't you explain that little bit of nanny poo to the audience while I'm finishing my sandwich?
No, I mean, a lot of, this Dave actually loves telling this story. And it's really your story to tell, Dave, honestly. But apparently in a lot of vanilla ice cream.
Pretend you're Dave and say, I was at a factory.
Hello, this is Dave Arnold on Cooking Issues, yeah. And I want to tell you about my story about vanilla bean matter and vanilla ice cream. Yes. So it turns out that a lot of the little black specks you see in vanilla ice cream are not really, they don't serve any flavor purpose. They're just this stuff called vanilla bean matter, which is just this byproduct from processing vanilla that has zero flavor, but it just has the little brown specks of vanilla bean in it, and you can put it in ice cream to make it look like it has more vanilla in it.
Yeah.
And apparently Dave went to a flavor house, was it?
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, and I don't know whether we want to call them out, but they're one of the people who helped us on the exhibit.
Well,
yeah. Oh, now he's eating a sandwich. We're supposed to be talking. And so, like, I went and took a big spoonful of this stuff out of the barrel, and it basically just tastes like kind of like a little bit like a tea, like a little bit mildly vegetal.
Mm.
Yeah. Nastassi, even this has nothing to do with anything. So I've already plowed through one sandwich, by the way. So that's how long it takes me to finish one. I keep going, except for I have to talk. I'll eat another one during break, and then we'll talk about it. But Nastassi, you've been following this. It's kind of food related. This lemonade thing. Jack has put, you know, being a musical style person is definitely following it.
I mean, yeah.
Wait, this is coconut?
No, not the one you have in your hand.
No, that one. I would rather eat that.
No, what?
I would rather eat this.
The bucket?
Mm-hmm.
All right, jeez.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a spoon, Jack?
We can make that happen.
We're so demanding. We're so demanding.
Fulfillment.
By the way, one more note on the dump meals before we go. Oh! Can't take this lady anywhere.
There it goes.
One more note on the dump meals. This woman, what's her name again? Do you remember?
Kathy Mitchell.
Kathy Mitchell has slow cooker recipes for pork tenderloin in there.
That's all. You see how hammered that thing is?
Oh, I think pork tenderloin is what I ate at that restaurant.
That's your fault for ordering it, fool. Yeah. But like the thing is like I think at the end of a slow cooking a whole pork loin, right, in the cooker, I think what you do is dump the sauce off, eat the sauce, and then use the pork loin as a Brillo pad to scour out your slow cooker because that's about how useful it's going to be at the end of the
pork. Thank you.
I use it as a pumice stone.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God, my thing didn't modify. I don't have today's radio questions. I'm gonna have to do it by. Do you have the questions?
There's just the one.
No, there's two.
Oh, the one I sent this morning.
Yeah.
Did you have about lemonade, Dave? Did you have something there or just?
No, I just wanted to know what you guys thought about it. I know Nastassia follows Beyonce and Jay-Z, and you know.
Yeah, Stas, you're into that?
No,
that's a lie.
I don't
that's
follow
a lie.
Them. Like on Instagram, I do not.
Oh, no, I mean, in real life, you follow him. Like, you're
they
like.
They happen to be somewhere I was.
Yeah, and in okay. Yeah, whatever. Whatever, anyway.
I had an issue because I heard somebody the other day was like, yeah, Beyonce is like the new Prince. And I'm like, yeah, maybe if she learned how to play 10 instruments.
You know? Wow. Wow.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, this is the first episode we had after Prince. I couldn't believe that happened. Crazy.
Yeah.
What's your favorite Prince song, Jack?
Whoa, that's a tough question. I've been listening to a lot of Morris Day and the Time for the past week, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. What's the song? 777-9311. I don't know if you know that one. It's good stuff.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Housequake. You know that song?
Yeah, that's good.
I like Housequake, and I like the Black Album because I remember back when in the 80s when I was in high school, we went, and I think it was the 80s. Yeah, we went down to St. Mark's Place. There used to be a place that sold bootleg cassettes on St. Mark's and bootleg actually LPs.
Oh right, and it was only available bootleg, right?
I don't even remember the name of it. It was upstairs. You know what I mean? And we would walk up the stairs to that like second floor-y shop. And it's all these bootlegs, and we're like, and, you know, kids, you're like, oh my God, it's illegal. Why is nobody busting these people? And you buy bootlegs, and Prince had a whole – and at the time, this blew my freaking mind, right? Prince had a whole album, the Black Album, which he just never released. He did it. He finished it, compiled it, never released. I think he later did, actually. I think later it was officially released.
Yeah, it did. It came out, like, a few years later.
Yeah, but, like, back then it was, like, the idea that, like, someone would compose a whole album and then just be like, nah, crap on it, and then not release it was, like – So there's a song in there called Bob George that I listen to a lot.
Nice.
Bam, ch, bam, bam, ch, bam, 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 ch, bam. And it's all this crazy. You know that song?
No.
Bob.
I think Prince single-handedly triggered my entry into puberty with the song Cream.
Whoa. That's way a lot of information while you're sitting there pounding ice cream sandwiches and making lewd gestures.
That's a lewd gesture.
Before he totally made a lewd gesture.
There's no lewd gesture.
That's a lewd gesture.
No, it's not a lewd gesture.
Just every day.
It's a total lewd gesture. Every day I have to deal with this people. Please. This man runs a food museum. Can you believe it? All right. Hey, Cooking Issues gang. Good luck on the centrifuge. By the way, we have the hopefully last prototype rotor before we can figure out and approve what's going on. So should be some updates soon. That's coming, next week?
Next week.
I can start testing with it? Oh, I do not envy any of you that have to make items across intercontinental item manufacturing is, such a joy. Right, Stas?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good luck on the centrifuge. I have my ducats ready to slap on the pre-order form. So my grocery store – here comes the question. So my grocery store only sells cream in pints, and at the rate I go through it, I tend to only use half before it spoils. Any tip on how to keep cream fresh for longer? I primarily use it for seasoning coffee, I guess lightening coffee. I would guess I would use about a quarter of a pint a week maximum, so I need a pint of cream to last a month with quarter pint drawdowns. I have tried the room temperature stable mini halves and halves, but the flavor is overly cooked, caramelly, and not what I am going for. That's just gross. Stuff's straight gross.
Gnarly.
Nasty. Fresh, sweet cream flavor is the best. If there's nothing to be done, any recipe suggestions to use up the cream before it spoils every week or two? Thanks for the great content. Chris. Oh, Chris. Chris, listen. Listen, first of all. Cream, at least in my supermarket, cream is actually vastly more expensive in the pint and half pint things and vastly cheaper in the full quart. So it's like you're paying only – like if you're buying like a half pint to a quart, you're only paying double for the whole quart versus a half pint. Now once you have a quart of cream on hand, right, then you can use some for your coffee and then you can do all kinds of fantastic stuff with the rest. Butter, right? Making your own butter is it's delicious. It's rewarding. And you get the buttermilk for cooking with pancakes or whatever, muffins or whatever. I don't know what you cook. Do you cook pancakes? Do you cook muffins? Any kind of baked good, right? The butter is delicious as butter, right? I don't bake with that butter, but that butter is great on bread and stuff like that. If you have a KitchenAid, it's pretty easy to make. You just got to remember when you're doing it, put plastic wrap around the bowl so that you put plastic wrap around the bowl because it's going to spatter. Right as it goes, and use the cake mixing thing, and not the balloon. The balloon is going to become a kind of a. I think don't I use that? Maybe I use the balloon. I think I use the cake because I think the balloon gets all nasty when the butter breaks and when it breaks and turns into a big ball. Anyway, maybe I can't remember. It's been a while. Try both. They should both work. Do it chilled that way. Another thing to do is whipped cream. Hello, whipped cream is so freaking delicious. Who doesn't like whipped cream?
Stas, you like it?
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, wow. What am I? I'm not Satan. I know some people don't like whipped cream on things. Here's some things that whipped cream – like whipped cream on ice cream, good. People say, oh, no, it's like cream on cream. Yeah, good. You know what I mean? Whipped cream on cake, good. Whipped cream on – I don't put whipped cream on my breakfast items.
Pancakes.
Oh, like pancakes?
I don't.
Yeah.
It's not bad. I just don't do it. I like whipped cream on cookies, though. at nighttime. I like whipped cream on donuts at nighttime. Not in the morning. I like whipped cream on a spoon. I like whipped cream, basically.
Dave Arnold's new children's book.
In any format. Now listen. Listen, people. Listen. If you're going to make whipped cream at home, the easiest way to do it is like spike it with some sugar that's going to make it stay stable longer and put it in the EC canister under pressurization, and it lasts a long time in the EC thing if you have a whipped cream siphon. And that's the easiest way to keep whipped cream around so it doesn't spoil. You don't have to re-whip it all the time, because if you whip it and put it in a bowl, it doesn't last very long. Now, another thing. There are many different kinds of cream. You should look at the cream you're purchasing, okay? So the best tasting cream by far is just regular pasteurized cream. But it's actually increasingly difficult. I mean, I'm sure unpasteurized cream is the best, right? But of the stuff that you can normally buy, standard pasteurized cream is the best tasting. But at least in the quart variety, which is the way that I buy stuff all the time, you can't really get it because it doesn't last as long. Back, you know, if you work food service, you can get that kind and you go through it so it doesn't spoil. But when you're buying, and I forgot, I didn't look at the small containers, but if you buy the quart sizes of cream, fresh cream, they're high temperature pasteurized. They're ultra high temperature pasteurized cream, and they should last a month. I looked it up. My Dropbox didn't update, so it didn't come through. But I think that those things will last a month. But now you have to go through a whole quart in a month instead of just what do you say, half pint or something like that?
Yeah.
Keep it in the back of your fridge, and it should go on. Now here's another thing. You should start using cream in soups. That is delicious.
Cream, yeah, that's good.
Cream soups. And then people could be like, you're cooking with so much cream. Be like, shut up. You're eating a whole thing of broccoli. It's a little cream in it. Suck it up. Right or wrong?
Totally right.
Totally right. And then here's another fact. So there's a lot of argumentation? Argument. There's a lot of argument. See, I hate that. It's like, I don't like the word utilize either. It's like a bunch of extra syllables. You know what a good way to say utilize is? Use. Anyway. Jack, what are your feelings on that? Do you have any feelings?
On the use-utilize debate?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll go with use.
You go use?
Yeah.
Like Miley Carpenter, who runs the Food Network magazine and is like, you know, the editor in the family, other than my wife who edits my books, obviously. My book. That whole family hates the word utilize because it's just – it has no use. The word utilize has no use over the word use. Mm-mm. Unless you literally mean I am taking something that was not a tool and turning it into a tool. Like, then technically it has been.
Yeah, that is a good use for that word.
But when does that come up? I'm utilizing my knowledge. No, you're using it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And I would say tool.
Tool.
No. How would you use it in tool?
I wouldn't. I mean, I what would we mean?
Utilize a stick.
I use a tool. I use a stick to beat you over the head.
Right.
Boom.
Wow.
Beyonce uses a baseball bat to smash up that car. See? Doesn't utilize a baseball bat. That's weak. Weak. Another one. Anyway, I'm not going to get it. Later on, we can go into magazine editors' grammatical pet peeves because they're kind of interesting. Using to from and things that aren't a range. Hates that. Hates that. They have everything from chickens to French fries. And you're like, excuse me, not a range. Like, what continuum has chicken on one side and French fries on the other? It makes no freaking sense. And they don't have everything anyway.
With that
they don't,
voice, of course.
Well, that's how, you know. Anyway, so just stay away from those sorts of statements. How do we get into this? What are we talking about?
I don't know.
No, cream.
We're talking about whipped cream.
Problem with cream is that cream that you buy in the store, aside from how it's pasteurized, typically heavy cream, they know you're not going to use it very long, and they know you're going to use it for a lot of different things. They stabilize typically the hell out of it. So look at the box of cream on the side. And the stabilizers they use in the cream will radically change whether or not, and here's the important thing for you in particular for what you're doing, whether or not the cream is 100% freeze-thaw stable. So cream, as it comes out of, well, after it separates, but cream as is given by the cow, right, if you freeze it and then thaw it, the ice crystals, and so Harold McGee has a very good section on this on food and cooking, where as it freezes, the butterfat will form kind of sharp butterfat crystals. The ice will water will form ice crystals. These will mess with the fat globules. What are your thoughts on the word globule?
Hate.
Globule. The spores. right? Globules and spores. It's like Nastasia, like just like her skin is creeping. If you want Nastasia to have nightmares, send her pictures of like leaf fungi.
Oh,
like,
don't do that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying that the viewers here, listeners, don't want you to have nightmares. They're not going to do that to you. Do it. Anyway.
You also have a hole phobia. There's, you know, people who like can't look at like lotus roots, for example. Because of like the grid of holes.
Mm-hmm. You have that problem?
Mm-hmm. Really?
Mm-hmm. Is it ever since like, you hit that pothole in Brooklyn?
Like tripe, for example. Also, things that
the problem with
Swiss cheese.
The problem with Swiss cheese? No, it's Swiss, so you like it.
No, that's not true. Swiss cheese is a little better.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's more like a crater.
Yeah.
Because you can see the bottom of the hole.
Itchy.
Makes you itchy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the thing. People who have this hole phobia, they get all itchy when they see all these holes.
Is this a real thing?
Yeah, I guess so.
Is there a
I
word
about
for
the,
it?
Yeah.
I'm going to look it up. Let's see.
Where the hell does that come from? Does it come from watching too much
of
Shia LaBeouf?
I don't know
if
the pronunciation here.
There's some theories about it.
Trypophobia.
Yeah.
Trypophobia?
Yeah.
Like you're going to trip into
the... No, T-R-Y-P. Ophobia.
Oh, really?
Could be tripe. I don't know. Tripophobia.
My problem with tripe is like it's delicious, but that smell is so indicative of like slaughterhouse smell. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Anyway, until you totally process it, whatever. Back to cream. So, so.
By the way, I love that we're talking about cream after I said cream. You know, Prince.
Get on top.
Oh,
cream.
Man.
Yeah.
Shaboogie bop.
Yeah. She's, Peter always has to take it in an inappropriate place. It's a family freaking show. I don't know how many times I have to say this.
Yeah.
Hey, Peter. I got something for you that you'll appreciate coming up in a second here.
All right, hold a second. All right, so cream. So listen. So what happens when you freeze cream that hasn't been treated?
There we go.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Sorry, you can keep talking, Dave.
I love it. I love it.
We are more scattered than even normal on today's show.
Dave is now the Dizza.
Oh, we're more scattered than even normal.
That way you can't get sued.
Oh, is that the amount like you can do without getting sued?
Yeah, that's what I just said. I don't know.
So you've made that up. You don't know if we're going to get sued.
That's
all right. I just started cranking into it. Anyway, whatever. I was going to try to explain cream at that point. But look, so if you don't add any stabilizers or whatnot, as I said, the butter fat will form little thingamajiggers that ruin the fat globules, and the ice crystals will do the same because they're sharp. And you can read about this in McGee's on Food and Cooking. And when you thaw the cream back out, probably won't break, but it won't have a lot of the same properties. I don't know about the whipping. I never tested, but I know that kind of cream is not going to be as heat stable as it was before, so you're going to get a lot of fat separation, right? By the way, I'll finish before. But luckily, unluckily for some people, luckily probably for you, most creams that you buy, again, I haven't looked at the small containers, but the large containers, the quarts, are heavily stabilized, right? So I looked up two different ones on the web. I looked up, I don't have it in front of me, but so I did it from memory, Organic Horizon brand. Theirs is stabilized with Gel-Aan gum. Right, and so what Gel-Aan gum does is they're probably forming a very light fluid gel with it to keep it stabilized. But I haven't tested that one for free sauce stability, but that might increase the free sauce stability. It depends a lot. Depends on which Gel-Aan they're using and what ratio they're using, because they don't say what kind of Gel-Aan they're using, whether they're using high or low acyl Gel-Aan. But then I looked at Land O'Lakes cream, and Land O'Lakes cream has a shotgun spray of stuff in it to stabilize it. So it's got polysorbate 80, which is an emulsifier. It's got mono and diglycerides, which is another emulsifier. Mono diglycerides, I used to use it more. I haven't used it in a long time. It's a triglyceride is a fat, right? So it's it's got three fatty acids on a glycerin thing, and it's obviously it's lipophilic. It likes oil because that is a fat. It's an oil. If you break off one of those fatty acids, right now you have a little bit of a water loving portion on where the fatty acid was attached to the back. Bone, and that would be a diglyceride. Break off two fatty acids, and you have two of those water-liking areas, and so you get this what's called amphiphilic molecule monodiglyceride that can do some emulsifying. It is very heavily balanced in the favor of fat, though, so you have to dissolve mono and diglycerides in fat, and you can do all sorts of fun stuff with it, like thicken fats or make fat foams or all kinds of other things. But anyway, so it's got mono and diglycerides in it, which is probably going to increase its whipping ability of the cream, probably going to help it on the freeze-thaw. I don't know if the polysorbate 80 is helping on the freeze-thaw or not. I'm assuming it is. It's another emulsifier. I don't really know as much about the functionality of polysorbate 80 because I've never used it as a standalone ingredient. But lastly and not leastly, it has carrageenan in it. And carrageenan, in these levels, it performs a stabilization similar to what Gelan's performing in the other thing. Long story short is with that poop spray of stabilizers in it, I bet you can freeze and thaw that Land O'Lakes cream and use it without issue. The issue – without issue. And then I say there's an issue. But the problem is it takes a long time typically to thaw these things out. And you want to exclude air. So it depends on how your freezer works. But like a lot of times, even with liquids, I'll put liquids in freezer zippies, and then I'll get the air out with the zippy, and I'll throw the zippies in because they freeze very quickly. And have you noticed, Stas, recently that some Ziplocs are crappy?
Mm-hmm.
I just noticed this recently.
The
like
brand,
no, on honest to God Ziplocs. I've had a couple side seals go bad on me. Remember, were those brand Ziplocs that time that we did the blender drinks with the
I don't
and remember we got so. Oh, they were off brand. I've been having problems is the double seal on the top. You turn it on the side and it forms a little spout and it pours a little bit of liquid out of that top. So always invert your Ziplocs after you seal them to make sure that you don't have a good seal. Anyway, exclude the air, Ziploc label. They freeze quickly that way and they thaw very quickly that way. So you can just put it in cold water running in the sink and thaw it out in a couple of minutes. Because if you just take a quart of cream and put it in your fridge to try and thaw it, good freaking luck. You know what I mean? It's going to take forever. Another thing I've noticed is that when you're thawing, when you're using milk, I have this situation where I put milk that was already expired in a fridge, closed the fridge, went back a week later, and it was fine because the fridge hadn't opened or closed at all. So if you can keep your milk and dairy in the absolute coldest part of your fridge so that it's not going through a lot of temperature fluctuations, it will last a lot longer. That's another point. I had another point on cream, but I don't know. Should we go to a break? Maybe I can think about it.
Yeah, and then I got a question for Peter that he can mull over the break.
All right, so give me
Antoine
a question now.
Wants to know if they have anything regarding sustainability at MoFad, and with that, we'll be right back. No, not that song.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market, America's healthiest grocery store with more than 400 locations throughout the United States. Download the Whole Foods Market app on your smartphone for recipes, sales, information, and digital coupons. Or visit WholeFoodsMarket.com to find a store closest to you.
Before we come back, another thank you to Christopher Tompkins Tinch, who donated on behalf of Cooking Issues. There are a bunch more donations that came in. I got to go through the backlog, but really appreciate that, everybody. And we're back.
You're back.
All right, so Dave is right now racing to see how fast he can eat a ice cream sandwich. Anyway, so we had a question about MoFad and sustainability, and yes, I mean, in short, sustainability is right at the heart of what we're trying to do at MoFad. And I think the big challenge for us is that so far we've only been able to take on one exhibition at a time. And the first thing we did was the Puffing Gun exhibit, which traveled around and looked at the story of breakfast cereal. And the exhibition we have up now is on the flavor industry. And so we've really only been able – and the way we approach things is we like to take on really narrow stories and do a deep dive. And so we haven't had a chance yet to do an exhibition that looks at sustainability in a big way, but we've been taking it on in our programs. And so we've done programs. We did something with Slow Food, for example, where we looked at some endangered food species and highlighted them. And that's stuff that's all incredibly important for us, and that's going to come up in an exhibition very soon.
Peter, you got so political there. I like it.
Yeah.
It was good.
I mean, it's serious.
That's how you can tell
it's really serious.
No, Antoine. So Antoine, Dave, and then maybe we could take this later, but Antoine elaborated, and he's like, oh, can the Dave and the crew in the chat room comment on interesting innovations in sustainability for avoiding food waste, upcycling, and repurposing, like making shrubs out of spent fruit or produce?
What do you mean shrub? Oh, shrubs.
Yeah.
I'm like, plants? What are you talking about?
Plants.
Like shrubs, like drinks.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of shrubs, another thing you can do with cream Just came up with a recipe last week for stabilized cream syrup to use in cocktails like grasshoppers, where it doesn't break no matter what you do to it. So you just add sugar to the cream, not a full simple syrup. I got to get the ratios. I calculated it at the bar, but you sugar it. I think it was like 30% by weight or something. I got to go look it up. And then you add a little acid to pre-break the milk proteins a little bit. It thickens quite a bit, but it is stable as the day is long in a drink. And it's good. We're going to be putting
cream issues.
Cream issues.
With Dave Arnold.
It's creaming issues. Creaming is not a gross word. It's a technical freaking dairy term. Jerks.
All right,
jerk.
Offensive.
Jerk.
So how quickly did you eat that ice cream sandwich?
So first of all, the question is how quickly can I eat a Milk Cult DC ice cream sandwich while still enjoying it and making fun of Peter while he's talking on the microphone? And the answer is 45 seconds. So I can eat one in 45 seconds, still enjoy it, so I'm not like pushing it into my face at the fastest rate possible, and make fun of Peter while he's talking in 45 seconds.
Very impressive.
Yeah. I mean, a shadow of my former self. Shadow, were you there at the French culinary hot dog eating contest? So they had a hot dog eating contest, and
he did it in a.
And at the time, I was like smaller
now. But he did it in a Lucha Libre mask.
Yeah, El Santo. Yeah, but I had like Rocky style. I had to cut the mouth hole
because
the mouth hole wasn't big enough to shove the hot dogs in. So I had to cut the corners of the mouth hole.
And so
creepy. All these big guys were like, yeah, whatever. I hosed them. I just ripped them. I went full Kobayashi. You know what I mean? The squeeze and dunk. Squeeze, dunk, break, smash into face.
I remember you telling me about in high school how you used to drink whole 2 liters of soda at the supermarket to be able to just hand the bottle back and get your deposit money.
I'm cheap.
Oh, my God.
You drink a whole 2 liters.
How recently was that?
I was in high school, man. I had no money. So, like, you know, I was at a summer program, and like, you know, the $50 I had was the $50 I had. You know what I mean? And so, like, you know, I don't drink flat water. It's disgusting. I think I've mentioned this. I at the time I was drinking diet soda, so I didn't want to pay them their deposit. So I handed them the money. They took the deposit. I drank the entire 2 liter in front of them, put it back down onto the counter, and got my money back.
Wow.
That's how cheap I am.
But I can't imagine you actually enjoyed that entire 2 liter.
That's where you're wrong. I am the utility monster. I enjoy down to the bitter end. I told you. Well, you weren't here. But certain things I've never, like, I can't have another. Like, I won't eat another ice cream sandwich now because it's like I'm older now and it's gross and I've had two already. But I'm not eating the next one because I wouldn't enjoy it. You know what I mean? Thank you, by the way, to Milk Cult DC for the sandwiches. Nastasia, how's the ice cream?
I don't like it very much.
Why?
Because it tastes like lemongrass.
Tastes like Asian.
She hates lemongrass. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Tastes like Asian.
Well, for those of you that don't know, Peter Kim is of the Asian persuasion.
I like him. Also, I'm having a slight breakdown right now.
What do you mean?
Because I looked up trypophobia, and the first thing that comes up is just freaking photos. And like inside right now.
Oh my
now,
God,
I can tell
you're actually like scratching yourself. Like,
oh, she is.
Oh my God.
She is scratching herself.
Well right. Ooh, now. It's not a good Google search, God. I will say.
Not doing well.
Please don't send Nastasia Lopez
crazy. Oh my God.
Crazy.
Wow. She's having a visible reaction to it. That's not, crazy.
I mean, it's a rough search. I don't know why you did that to yourself.
Because she can't.
I wanted to see what remedies there were. And then, of course, the first thing just like, boom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, so the remedy apparently is not total immersion.
F-U. Yeah.
It's not like, so here's the remedy. Boom.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, yikes.
So we had this in from John Vermeilen about – actually, we have an invite to go visit. He has a pasta factory.
Nice.
He didn't mention the name of it. I looked it up, but I'm not going to mention it because if he didn't mention it, maybe he doesn't want me to mention it. They do a lot of contract work. But they make lots of funny shapes. They make like the little pizza wedge shapes. What are your thoughts on funny-shaped pasta?
I don't like it very much.
What about for kids, though?
It's bad. Like, it's bad. I think like
all regular pasta shapes are funny shapes, though. Like, what are your feelings on pre-stranglers? Strozzapreti.
I like those.
Do you like it because it contains the word strangle, or do you actually like the texture?
No, I like the texture.
Yeah? But you think the funny shapes are not texturally involved. They're just pictures.
Yeah, and they usually break. you know?
Yeah.
I hate
Well, it's because people overcook them. You know what else I saw? Because they're selling to commercial establishments, one of the things they sell is heavy wall pasta for retort applications. And I was like, because we've had actually people wonder about, like, you know, how to put pasta into soups and stuff here. And it's like, well, the pros, I guess, buy heavy walled pasta for retort applications. So we said use, like, ors. Are you getting better?
Yeah.
You recovering?
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm tryptophobic now after looking it's at so that wrong. Stuff. That's bad.
So I have no reaction to it.
Really?
Nastasia is like some sort of chipmunk, like wiping her face
it's
off,
just, it,
as though there's a hole on her face that she can wipe off.
This is very itchy,
yeah. This
very
is crazy.
I've never seen
such a reaction before.
It's so gross to me, and I can't move. So that
I actually feel bad for Nastasia now, and that never.
Never.
That's a first.
That's the first on the show. Wow.
The
first. Hey.
Yeah, I actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it's bad if I feel bad.
It's true.
I've been catching up on some cooking issue shows. In the January 26th show, you mentioned a pest control fumigant. What about that word?
Fine.
Hey, you're like, with what I'm worried about in my head, fumigant.
Yeah.
Fumigant used for food manufacturing facilities. It's now banned because of ozone concerns. You're probably thinking of methyl bromide. Yes, I am. Our pasta plant in Fairlawn, New Jersey now uses Profume when we fumigate, though it's unfortunately not as effective as methyl bromide. Our nemesis is typically – this is – remember, it was in result because someone was trying to cure a bunch of hams in their house, and I was worried about mites for them. Not as effective as methyl bromide. Our nemesis is typically the red flower beetle. Oh, I hate those mothers. You ever had if you buy – have I discussed this before? If you buy certain kinds of, like, small-run organic flowers or like, specialty flowers, like chapati flower, a lot of times – the facilities aren't as like locked down as like the big milling concerns are, and so you can get like eggs from things like that, and then they will later get infested, which is why I freeze the hell out of all those flowers. You freeze those flowers, Peter?
No, I never thought about that. That's
I would.
A good idea.
Yeah, or yeah. Like if you bring spices from another country, you should freeze those suckers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're going to store them for a long period of time, because who the hell knows what's going to pop out? Like you know, who knows? Maybe you could bring the next Asian longhorn beetle with you.
Yeah.
No, don't do that. I wonder whether that's ever happened. Usually they come – like pests like that come in on – I guess it has happened. Usually they come in on things like crates and whatnot. But anyway, because like spices aren't on the list of no brings, right?
Well, yeah. But then anything brought in – well, actually it's interesting. Yeah, I guess not.
Don't know.
Yeah.
But
stuff brought in commercially all gets – fumigated. Yeah.
Our nemesis is typically the red flower beetle, and Profume just doesn't kill the eggs very well, so you have to just increase all your other pest management work, which is the right thing to be doing anyway, of course. Hope this is helpful. Fan of your work, and great to see MoFat on such a roll. And this is a side note. Peter, Kim, and I actually had a good chat about pasta and noodles or Italian-American food history as a potential museum topic. Do you remember said conversation?
Yes, of course. That's John. I've been emailing with him.
I would like to go great see guy. His factory.
Yeah, I told him we'd try to come out.
He's in Philadelphia?
No, Jersey.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know where Fairlawn is.
Yeah.
It's in Jersey.
Yeah.
All right. So a couple of updates. By the way, I told you last week, I think I told you that I brought this chicken gun into the city but then wasn't allowed to fire it in the city, this chicken cannon that I built. I brought it out to back to Connecticut, took it back together, fired another chicken because Dax wanted to see it shoot. 250 mile an hour. I launched it into the forest. It hit a tree, hit the top of a tree, and was still going up when at the 300 foot mark when it hit that tree. Crazy, man.
What's a chicken gun?
I already went through it. I'm not going to go through
never
it again.
Mind.
I just thought I'd give people an update on it. Now, what was the question we had about sustainability and shrubs and whatnot?
Oh, like repurposing old fruit? Is that what he said?
Old fruit. Now you sound like an English dude.
Old fruit. Spent fruit and produce, you know.
Yeah, so...
food waste, upcycling, repurposing.
Like, obviously, anyone who is paying a lot, like in a commercial application, even at home you should, but in a commercial application especially, you see a lot of waste, and it bothers you, right? So you have certain things you have too much of, and there's never going to be enough use for it. Like, you know, we have so many lemon and lime and grapefruit peels that, like, unless we literally open another business making marmalades and weird things like that, it's not even the right stuff for marmalade, you'd have a tough time. But I always enjoy finding uses for things. I mean, it's kind of it's responsible to the your restaurant or yourself because you throw away a lot of money, and it's responsible. It respects the ingredient because you're getting the maximum amount of use out of it. And it's just responsible all the way around. And I think it's a really good mental exercise as well to try to reduce the amount of waste that you have. Now, there's various ways you can do this. One is to take all of the scraps and just cook something disgusting and force your employees to eat it. And that's the what like used to be like the old family meal style. I remember Alex Guarnaschelli once told me that when she was working at, you know, some like three-star Michelin, I don't know, in France, what they would do is they would just collect up the raft from clarification, like all of the like the spent lean ground meat and spent egg whites and like foam and gunk, and just serve that up. Here's your family meal.
Ugh.
Enjoy.
Yeah.
Enjoy the raft.
Yeah.
Stas would be like, crap on this. Like, imagine Stas, what would you do if that, like, you'd be like,
I hate the raft.
Really?
A lot.
Yeah? Wow. Hate the raft. Anyway, so like that's one way to reuse things is just shaft your friends and family. But there's a lot of like other, obviously like certain things can be composted. Any vegetable peelings can be used to make stocks, which can then be frozen. On fruits, I mean, when we have leftover juice, we try to reuse it for cordials. When we have peels, it's a little harder. Like I made a batch of grapefruit bitters once out of a bunch of spent grapefruit peels, and it was great, but I made a lifetime supply out of like one day's grapefruits. You know what I mean? So it's hard to figure out 100% use for all that, because a lot of times you'll need a lot more, especially in a bar, right? So when you're ordering meat, it's much more responsible to design your menu such that you use up the right amount of each thing. But when you have a bar, it's hard to say, well, I'm going to have a bar now, and so you're going to have 35% peel-based things, right? So you're going to have – it's like, you know, half oleosaccharum. No, oleosaccharum is great, but we don't go through enough of it, and people demand more fresh lemon juice drinks. And so I can't really – you know what? I probably could. If I had more cojones, I could probably figure it out. Right, Stas? It's just a matter of not having the will or the cojones to do it. Right? Mm. Well, that's an interesting idea. It's hard. I think it's difficult in a bar with things like spent fruit. Luckily, that stuff's typically not as expensive. And when I am using really expensive materials like strawberries or like – there's a new drink on the menu that Felipe made with Nopales. Did you have that? Did you like that? Rum and Nopales?
Mm-hmm.
It was good. Things like that, we typically get very, very high yields because we're using a centrifuge, so there's very little waste, which is one of the reasons I like the centrifuge, and which is why Nastasia and I are going to start selling more centrifuges. So, Stas, do you have a recipe picked out that you're going to make for next week?
I think I'm going to do the chili. Or I'll do the slow-cooked pork and sauerkraut.
Okay, Nastasi's going to come back with her dump meal version of slow-cooked pork and sauerkraut. Shout out to Milk Cult. Thanks, Peter Kim, for coming on to the radio program. We'll see you next – oh, next week is Rangam?
Rangam.
We got Rangam from Catching Fire, How Learning to Cook Made Us Human. I think that's the exact title of the book. We'll have to look it up. Call in your questions about how cooking made us human next week on The Cooking Issues.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Alweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, Why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, the French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.
Thank you.